welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Robert Holly with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into another thought-provoking episode of Disrupt, I want to give a shout-out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business, spends less time on paperwork, and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. If you've heard it once, you've heard it a million times. Home health and personal care aides are the eyes and ears of the U.S. healthcare system. Despite that widely used mantra, a lot of care teams still don't leverage in-home care staff nearly enough. That's according to Dr. Robin Stone, Senior Vice President of Research at Leading Age and a well-known all-around aging expert. I recently caught up with Dr. Stone to find out how we could change that. During the conversation, we also touched on what home health and home care providers need to do to attract and retain their workers. Because let's face it, there's PDGM and a long list of other challenges out there, but workforce is still priority number one for many providers. All right, now that I've set the scene, let's get to that podcast. I'd like to now welcome Dr. Robin Stone to the show. Robin is a noted researcher and authority on aging and long-term policy. She currently serves as the Senior Vice President of Research at Leading Age. Robin is also co-director of the Leading Age LTSS Center at UMass Boston. Dr. Stone, thanks so much for coming on Disrupt.
Very happy to be with you.
All right. So today we're going to be focusing a good portion of this conversation on something you're very passionate about, and that's the role that home care aides play on care teams. You actually wrote about the topic just last month, early December. Happy 2020, by the way. Why should we pay more attention to the in-home care worker?
Well, that's such a great question. And for me, it's really a no-brainer. You know, next to family members, in-home care workers are really the primary hands-on providers of services, particularly long-term services and supports to older adults and other people with disabilities and chronic conditions in the United States and actually across the world. These folks are often what we call the eyes and the ears of the health and LTSS systems. They have very strong relationships with the people that they care for. They may be the only person in the home. Sometimes there may be a family caregiver. Often the older person or person being cared for may be living there alone. And it's the home care worker who's actually not only understanding the client, but really understanding the environment in which that client lives. And so the importance of this care professional, I really like to call them care professionals and not workers. The care professionals are really essential in terms of improving quality of care and quality of life for individuals receiving these kinds of services.
That line about how care professionals are the eyes and ears in the home, that's a line we hear so often. I want to go back to that December piece published on Leading Age. You actually wrote that, quote, behind every successful healthcare professional is a strong home care worker, end quote. Could you just walk me through what you mean by that?
Sure. If you think about the goals of our healthcare system, and that is to keep people living as long as possible, as successfully as possible in the community, trying to avoid higher risk environments like going to the hospital, visiting the emergency room, being institutionalized in a nursing home, really trying to help people remain in the community. The really bulwark of that system and the formal care system is the home care worker. And that person who is in the home is the link between the client and the rest of the world that is either on the medical care side or the long-term services and support side. And quite honestly, I think of us both on the research and the policy side, as well as the provider and the advocacy side, are recognizing that this workforce is often invisible to the healthcare professional at the same time that they are really sort of the center of the home care environment with the client. And so they are really important in terms of having a successful episode of care, and a good trajectory in terms of both the quality of the services that are delivered and the quality of life that people are engaging in as well.
This is actually a follow-up question I just thought of, but you know, you talk about these care professionals really being the linchpin in the healthcare system, and that reminds me that, you know, companies like Nike even are starting to recognize that. I think at the end of 2019, Nike came out and announced they actually developed a shoe for healthcare professionals, and they specifically cited home care aides as, you know, one of the champions that they're trying to serve.
Wow. That's such a fantastic thing to have Nike recognizing these professionals. And I, you know, the reason for these, the importance of these shoes are that these are extremely ergonomically challenging jobs for aides often. If you think about the kinds of things that they do in the home, very physical, often on their feet, a lot of the day while they're in people's homes, putting a lot of pressure on joints and all of those kinds of things. So the attention to the shoe is sort of a microcosm of recognizing attention and support for this frontline workforce. But I do want to also make it clear that this workforce is not just doing hands-on personal care. What's really important for the healthcare professional is that because they are in the home and they know these clients so well, and they understand the social environment and what we are calling social determinants of health these days, they are really primed for doing observation and documentation to really help the rest of the healthcare system to understand changes in condition, very subtle changes in condition, environmental issues that may be getting in the way or maybe barriers to optimal health and quality outcomes, recognizing issues around medication problems, looking around to make sure that there's mitigation of falls risk in the home. There's so many places where home care professionals are actually doing this informally, but our goal is really to have folks begin to think about a more formal way of building this workforce into teams.
And before we get too deep into this conversation, you know, could you just further elaborate, paint a picture for our listeners? Who are, you know, your typical in-home care aides? Or if we don't even want to, you know, be that specific, we could just say, who are your typical home care professionals? What do they look like in terms of demographics and how much are they making?
Sure.
Things along those lines.
Sure. This workforce is extremely diverse, obviously primarily women, which is true for a lot of these professions. The workforce is much more likely than other parts of the workforce to be non-white as well as immigrant. About almost a third of the home care workforce in this country, and of course this is distributed very variedly across the country, but almost a third on average of this home care workforce are immigrants, folks who are not born in the United States, many of them coming from the Caribbean, from Mexico, from Africa, from points all around the country, I mean all around the world. So it's a very diverse workforce, low wage. I call them home care professionals with low wages. And that is to say that the average wage for a home care aide is a little bit over $11 an hour across the country. Again, that varies tremendously depending on the market, but these are typically pretty low-wage workers. Many of these folks are on public benefits. It is not unusual to have a home care aide who is on Medicaid, who may be receiving SNAP benefits or some other publicly subsidized benefits. So it's a fairly vulnerable group on average, doing the lion's share of really hands-on care in the communities across the country.
You mentioned foreign-born workers or immigrant workers, and that just reminds me of how throughout the past year or so, maybe even over a year, we've heard about the need for maybe new immigration policy or visa programs specifically tailored to home care. I think that's something that I've heard in conversations with HCAOA, maybe even NOC. You know, what do you think about that idea?
Yes, I think it's a really important issue. I think that we have to understand that particularly for this frontline workforce, many of these individuals have been coming into the country through family unification. They are not coming through visa programs like folks who are nurses. And so there's a couple of things we have to recognize, and that is that any changes in immigration policy in this country, particularly as they relate to family unification, any less flexibility in terms of family unification in this country will have a grave impact on who can actually be in this labor force, because this is the labor force that is part of the pipeline today and in the future. At the same time, I do think we need to be thinking about new mechanisms for bringing folks in. For example, the Leading Age itself is working on some proposals to create a new guest worker program for the home care workforce that could be particularly used in shortage areas like rural communities, which are overly represented by the elderly and where there is no workforce available. So we absolutely need to be thinking about immigration policy and its role and maybe some new vehicles for helping to bring in quality, competent folks to do the home care work in this country.
So I'm just trying to put myself in maybe a foreign-born care professional's shoes for a second. I was born in Hinsdale, Illinois, so it's, you know, not easy for me to do, but I'm going to try here. You know, it's an undervalued job to start with. And then also, there might be cultural barriers that you have to get accustomed to. What are some just general challenges, maybe even opportunities that arise due to the fact a lot of nurses and aides originally come from outside the U.S.?
Sure. You know, I think that's a very good question. And the notion of cultural competence, or what is now more often referred to as cultural humility, meaning that in order to successfully employ nurses and aides in our long-term services and supports jobs, and particularly as we talk about home care, we need to be recognizing the cultural, ethnic variation and backgrounds that people bring as they enter these jobs, and the difficulties that they may have in engaging, particularly with clients who are not from the same ethnic group. As you may know, right now, about 80% of the elderly population in the United States is white. As I said, almost a third of the home care workforce are immigrants, most of whom are people of color from various countries, speaking different languages, having different attitudes towards caring for the elderly, attitudes towards dementia, attitudes towards death and dying, attitudes towards contact with folks. Some of the aides actually have different ways of thinking about how you touch people, how you look people, whether you look them in the eye or don't look them in the eye, and what that means for respect of an older person. So there are a lot of challenges to acculturating both the people who are coming over here and who are doing these jobs, but also the clients and the families who have to recognize that they have to be culturally competent in terms of how they work with the folks that they are hiring. Agencies also have to really recognize the challenges that this workforce brings and are facing. At the same time, the evidence shows that on average, the immigrant workforce is more loyal than native-born workers, and they also tend to have less turnover and are more committed to work than native-born workers. So they are a really important part of the workforce, and the cultural humility issues are both challenges, but I think they are also opportunities for bringing people together, sharing and building knowledge.
This is just a reminder for our listeners that we're currently speaking with Senior Vice President of Research at Leading Age, Dr. Robin Stone. Robin also serves as co-director of the Leading Age LTSS Center at UMass Boston. Robin, I want to circle back to the start of this conversation and talking about how we could better incorporate in-home care professionals into care plans, talking about the broader U.S. healthcare system. Is there a simple answer to that? I mean, how do we do that?
Well, you know, I don't think it's a simple answer. I think often informally, aides are incorporated into care plans by virtue of just them being in the home. But I think there needs to be intentionality in terms of recognizing the important roles that home care workers play in delivering services, being the link between the client and the rest of the healthcare system, and in particular, as I've said before, doing the kinds of observation and documentation of condition, changes in condition, needs and preferences. And this is particularly true of people with dementia, of which we are seeing a larger proportion of this client base with some type of cognitive impairment, the important role that aides can play if they are formally integrated into care planning and care implementation. Now, in order to make that happen, a number of things have to occur. First, we need highly trained, skilled home care workers. If you look at the requirements for training, even for Medicare-certified home health aides, it's on average 75 hours of training, which is not very rigorous and doesn't necessarily give you confidence that you have folks who really know what they're doing and can deal with highly complex situations. In addition to that, we need much more specificity in terms of how we train aides around special kinds of issues, cognitive impairment being one of them, depression and mental health being a second one, chronic conditions including CHF and COPD and all of those kinds of conditions is a third area. Fourth area has to do with function and what can the aide be doing in the home to actually maximize the functional potential of clients in the home. So thinking about the training, the certification, competencies, and then support that an aide needs to have when they are in the home by themselves. And, you know, I would say that the main issue here is that agencies need to start to think about how they build aides into care plans, how supervisors at the agency level actually work with the aides to provide the backup and the support to allow the aides to be part of a formal plan. And then we need to have the recognition of the whole care team as we move more primary care into the home and as other kinds of models are developed around home-based teams, how the aides become integral to that process. And finally, I would say that we need to allow aides to be more technologically proficient in the home. Every single aide these days probably has a PDA. Why aren't we building apps that actually allow the aides to enter some types of observations, share information and insights that they have around clients, and really have much better ongoing communication with the rest of the team that is not in the home?
I want to dig into that idea of training or upskilling care professionals, because I think that that's closely related to a pressing challenge that a lot of providers still face. And that has to do with the recruitment and retention of workers. And that's true for, you know, whether we're talking about non-medical home care, whether we're talking about Medicare certified home health, both, you know, delivering care in the home is a very, very tough, demanding job. Robin, in your experience, what can providers do to maybe beef up their recruiting and improve job satisfaction and, you know, at the end of the day, reduce workers' intent to leave?
Wonderful question. I actually think that we need to be paying dual attention constantly to both recruitment and retention. And I would actually say that if we paid more attention to retention, we wouldn't have as much challenges around recruitment. Right now, currently, we are in a pretty strong economy. And when local markets are tight because the economy is so strong, we're likely to see more turnover, particularly in lower wage occupations, because an aide could leave a job and move either to another agency or another line of work completely. And for a couple dollars more, that's an incentive because these are low wage occupations. So obviously the first thing we need to recognize again is, are we paying a living, sustainable wage that is commensurate with the competencies that are required these days for a care professional to do her work in the home? So that is the first question, I think. And forward-thinking agencies and organizations are actually paying attention to wages, benefits, and other kinds of compensation. But that's not the only thing that they can do, because we have many examples of aides who have left and have come back to organizations that are high quality and provide a really good work environment. And so this has to do with the fact that agencies in particular are responsible for their employees. And in the home care environment, which is a virtual job, obviously they're not working in a building, agencies need to be thinking about how they create a healthy workplace for their aides. What is the role of supervisors? I talked about this before, but all of the empirical work that we've done and others have done identified a good supervisor, a coach, an educator, a supporter as the linchpin to mitigating turnover challenges. If you have a great supervisor and a connection with that supervisor, you are much more likely to have a frontline workforce that is going to stay. So that's just one level of investment. Another piece of this where exemplary organizations are doing better has to do with onboarding. And that is to say that aides need good frontline onboarding in terms of what these jobs are really all about. Peer mentoring programs where aides are assigned a peer mentor for a certain period of time, could be 3 months, could be up to a year, to actually help the aides work through this, particularly in their virtual situations where they're not working in the building, but they're working in people's homes. Peer mentors have been demonstrated to actually have very positive outcomes. And then I would say, ultimately, it's that ongoing support and recognition that the aides are part of a formal team. We know, because we've seen this in small demonstrations, that when these aides are empowered and allowed to practice to their highest level possible, they are much more likely to stay in the job, and you're much more likely to attract people who want to be working in these environments. And I think at the end of the day, that's what's really important. Our exemplary providers are recruiting for people who will match, who will fit in these jobs, and not just looking for warm bodies.
Are there any specific predictors or signs that a care professional might be positioning himself or herself to leave a job?
Well, as I've said, the major predictor of intent to leave is the quality of the supervisor. And, you know, my suggestions in every talk that I give to our members here at Leading Age and to other organizations around the country and even globally is that if you did one thing, it would be to pay attention to the quality of your supervisors. Are they connecting with aides? You know, in some of the studies that we have looked at, we find that aides don't even know who their supervisors are. They may know who their scheduler is, but not necessarily their supervisor. And that is a travesty in terms of thinking about creating a quality workforce. So paying attention to the quality of management and supervision for this workforce is key. Second, of course, is recognizing the importance of competitive compensation in these markets is really important. And the third is really opportunities for advancement. Many aides want to grow in their jobs. They may not want to become LPNs or RNs, but they may want to specialize. And we need to be thinking about advancement opportunities, what we call career lattices, where folks become experts, specialists in medication management, specialists in dementia care, specialists in mental health care. These are avenues for home care aides where there is room for development and growth. I also think that many aides have the potential to become good managers because they are actually fantastic in terms of developing relationships with people. So I think it is incumbent upon home care agencies in particular to think about growth opportunities for their frontline employees and how they can create career pathways that are not just necessarily moving in a nursing direction, but may have other opportunities as well.
In your role, I'm sure you talk to a lot of providers, a lot of in-home care leaders on a regular basis. Are there any Leading Age members or agencies out there that are really, really good at recruiting or retaining their workers? You know, I'm wondering how the best of the best do this.
Well, I mean, you know, I've sort of ticked off the elements, and what I have found, and what a number of both us as researchers as well as people who are out there on the ground floor have found, is that it is being an employer of choice, recognizing that as a home care organization with employing these folks who are out in the field, we have a responsibility to create a healthy work environment, which can be extremely challenging because these jobs are virtual. This is sort of the original gig economy, right? You know, a lot of people are telecommuting or working at home now. Home care aides, home care professionals have been working in homes for centuries, sort of disconnected from the mothership, so to speak. And I think agencies that can understand and recognize how to create a healthy workplace for this type of workforce, the combination of good management and coaching and support, as well as competitive compensation and rewards and opportunities for career growth. One other predictor of mitigating intent to leave is consistency and consistent assignment, meaning that folks really enjoy working with the same clients. So, you know, thinking about scheduling and how you can actually create that kind of consistency, not just for the clients, but also for the home care aides, is really critical. These are the kinds of things that the exemplary organizations right now are doing. They're not just doing one thing. They're thinking about retention that is targeted to people who are likely to be best matched for these jobs. They have onboarding and orientation programs that are lengthy, that are not just one day. They support ongoing in-service training that is meaningful for this workforce, that is really tied to competencies that these folks really need. They're giving them opportunities for growth and movement and creating the kind of space where people want to work and where they want to stay.
While preparing for this conversation, I'd read through a lot of your research articles. There were a lot of things that stood out. But one thing that, you know, I'm remembering now, I think that you flagged how hospice aides are actually less likely to leave their jobs. Why is that? That seems like it could even be a more stressful role.
You know, I think this is mostly speculation because we did identify this as clearly an outcome, but we have not explored exactly why this is so, but my speculation has to do with a couple of things. First, on average, hospice workers make a lot more than other types of home care workers. So they are paid better, which obviously is not just financially an issue, but it is also a sort of an empowerment and value issue for aides. So hospice has some positive value associated with it. I also think that hospice itself, the concept and the underlying philosophy of person-centeredness and a holistic approach to palliative and end-of-life care resonates with a lot of aides because it is such a, it really focuses on comfort and embodying the whole person and empowerment of both the client but also the aides themselves. And so I think it is a much more hospitable part of the sector than other parts of the home care sector are these days. And I think we could learn a lot from hospice. You know, people have looked at hospice in terms of understanding person-centeredness, holistic approaches, and attention to quality of life. Maybe it makes some sense for us to look at hospice as a more hospitable work environment for the frontline workforce as well. So while these jobs are challenging, it also is some of the most rewarding work for the aides who are engaged in it.
It's been a pleasure chatting workforce with you so far. Before you hang up, I just wanted to ask about your 2020 plans. Anything interesting you're currently working on or plan to look into later this year?
Sure. We're just about to finish up a project that we had funded through a foundation looking across states to identify what states have been doing in terms of training, certification, career pathways, particularly as it relates to advanced home care roles and That report will be coming out later this year, I think within the next couple of months. We are also working on some new projects that would delve much more deeply into what an exemplary work environment really looks like for home care aides, and trying to understand how this gets operationalized in the different models of home care, including your more traditional visiting nurse type of an agency, franchises as they expand across the country and globally, some of the technology-based platforms that match home care aides with clients, and really understanding the nuts and bolts of what a quality workplace for these types of models, how we can achieve them, and what are the elements that are required to make that happen.
Well, it looks like that's about all the time we have for this episode of Disrupt. To recap, we talked about the rising role of in-home care workers, how to better incorporate them into care models. We went over some recruitment strategies that really would help any company, but especially home care and home health agencies. We'll put some of the highlights of this conversation up on HHCN within a week or two. Again, this was Dr. Robin Stone from Leading Age. Robin, thank you so much for your wonderful insights today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Robert Holly, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.